This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another edition of Pop Goes the Classics here on the Pop Experience. Yes, it's been quite a while, and we do apologize for that. You know, sometimes life does get in the way, but we are glad to be back because we are entering a new, not really a new era of Disney, but we are definitely entering a new decade as well as a new millennium. We are now past the Disney Renaissance and moving on to this next stretch of films, which... for better or worse, you know, has some lovers, but definitely has some detractors, and we will, of course, hit everyone here. But before we do, I do say we because it is not just me doing the show. I do have my usual tri-hosts that do this, so I will go ahead and bring them in. First, all the way in the great country of Germany, it is Miss Miranda Berthold. Miranda, how are you, my dear?
Hello! I'm alive.
That's all we can hope for, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I should do it where, like, one time I just answer you guys all in German, and everybody's like, what is wrong with her?
I'm surprised we haven't done that yet.
I did say hello and yes in German there. I catch myself. I don't know complete German, but I can get around.
All right, well, also joining us here from the great state of Connecticut, it is, of course, Mr. Andy Atherton. Andy, how are you, sir?
Steve, I am excited to take this musical journey with you and Miranda. I am also alive, which I believe is a minimum requirement for podcasting.
Very minimum.
As far as I know. Now, if people want to know what's wrong with Miranda, you have to be more specific. Could you narrow it down, please? And also, I don't speak German, but I listen fluently. So we're good to go.
Indeed.
I just messed you guys up off the bat, didn't I?
No, I just love how, like, I'm like, hello, I'm alive. And then Andy's like, I'd love to be here. And I'm like, I'm alive.
3 cups of coffee this morning, Miranda. That's why I'm so happy to be here. I'm happy to be here anyway. I love doing the show with you guys. And I am very excited about this movie. You know, we'll talk about it in a few minutes once Steve, gets through the intro with us to nut bars over here. But I've actually been looking forward to this one on the docket for quite some time. So I'm excited to talk about this one.
Yes, and as you teased it, we are going on a musical adventure because we are discussing the 38th film in the Disney canon. And in terms of this canon, at least the second sequel, of course, we had our first sequel back in 1990 with The Rescuers Down Under, and now we have our second sequel here, as we are going to be discussing Fantasia 2000. Of course, this is, as I said, the sequel to the first Fantasia released back in 1940, which, of course, you, Andy, you and Miranda did way back when. Of course, if you go back into the archives here on the Pop Experience, you will find that episode. This film was released on, well, it's interesting. So it was first released on December 17, 1999 in Carnegie Hall. It was then released in IMAX theaters on January 1st, 2000. And then it got a wider release on June 16th, 2000, which technically puts it after our next film, which we'll talk about in the next episode. And the reason we're doing that is because they do. yes, we do, unfortunately.
Okay.
we'll cross that bridge
to
when
be
we get
correct,
there.
Correct, we do, but.
we'll cross that bridge when we get there, but let's focus right now on this film because it is an interesting film to talk about. I did not see this in the theaters when it came out. I did catch it later in like different bits and pieces here, and then of course when I did my wonderful reviews of Disney a couple years ago, that was like the first time I watched it like in its full entirety. Andy, what were your kind of first early memories of this film? Because as you just mentioned, this is a favorite of yours.
Oh yeah, yeah. So I love the original Fantasia. I don't know if I necessarily call it a sequel because it's more of a continuation, so to speak. I mean, I also have thoughts too, because what I was hoping, and I think I had read or heard somewhere that they wanted to release a new Fantasia every, you know, maybe 10 years. Like, they had been working on a Fantasia sequel or continuation for quite some time, where they, what they were going to do is they were going to bring new ones in. They were going to have some old ones and they kind of change the old ones out here and there to retain like one or two or whatever. And I was excited for this announcement. And I saw this in IMAX during that release. I think it might have been one of the, I think this might have been the first time I saw something other than like a nature documentary at like an aquarium or something in IMAX. Like the first time I saw a proper movie in IMAX. And I was just blown away, especially when we get to one particular part of this one. Now, actually, it's probably the first piece in it, with the whales. But I was sat there, the mouth wide open. I was like a kid. Like, I was literally, you know, I was there. It was back when I was still with my ex-wife. We actually were married at the time, and she took me as like a Christmas present. And like, literally, I think she put her hand in front of my face, like, because I was just staring with the mouth wide open, like just in awe of what I was watching. And I enjoyed this, and I am so glad that they did this, but I'm also annoyed that they haven't done another one, and it's been 23 years. So very excited to really get into the nuts and bolts of this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Miranda, what were your kind of first early memories of Fantasia 2000?
So we have finally come to one that I don't really have an initial memory of, and I know that sounds really bad. I know I didn't see this one in the theater, but I don't know at what point I actually like sat down and watched it, to be very honest with you. It's a fantastic movie. I just unfortunately don't have like a distinct tie to this one this time. But I have to ask, Andy, I didn't know about the whole like hopefully doing everything 10 years. So just like real quick, like, do you feel, both of you, do you feel like that's excessive, or like that would have worked if we'd done a different Fantasia every 10 years? Andy, I think I already know your answer is that you'd like it. Is that correct?
I think it would work actually too. I mean, you could even,
do you?
Now with Disney Plus, they could, but I mean, some of these pieces, look, because they don't have to be done by one unit. You could have separate units doing these.
That's true.
You know, over, you know, whenever. It doesn't have to be done at the same time. They could have like, hey, initially just to get like a bunch of the pieces together, like the animations. I mean, yeah, you would obviously have to film the intros and all that stuff, you know, separate, like all at what, like when you have everything all lined up. But they mm-hmm. could do, you know. They retained, you know, we'll talk about Sorcerer's Apprentice for this one. So maybe for the next one, they bring back like, you know, Rites of Spring or something like that. And then this one, they retain like one of these, and then we get like, you know, six new ones. And then, you know, they you know, pull out whatever. It's over. It's kind of like, it could be like Choose Your Own Adventure, or like, you know, popping different things in, like, you know, like a best of kind of thing. And okay. Yeah, this would be successful. I think it doesn't need a big theatrical run, but now they have, you know, I would also love for them to break them up and put it on Disney Plus, like all these pieces. I would like to, like, one day, like, you know, if I have like, you know, a little while and I don't want to get too invested in something, but I'm like, oh, I really want to watch this, you know, whatever piece from Fantasia. Mm-hmm. If they had them separately on Disney Plus in shorts form, that's something I would access. But that, I'm like, you know, really big, huge Disney nerd. So I think they should do this. I think it's something, you know, I don't know if they've talked about it, because this was under like the Michael Eisner regime. So I don't know if this was something that maybe died, that idea, once he was out and Bob Iger took over. But I kind of hope that they think about doing that again.
Okay. And Steve, I know this is your hosting this time, but when he said that, I had never heard of that. So like, I'll let you tell me what you think, and then go, you can go right ahead. I guess the only thing I would add to Andy is like, you're right. And you could also maybe every 10 years, like, use new, I know it's supposed to be an orchestra thing, but think of I'm thinking of the musical talent that you could introduce as well. Like, oh, every yeah. 10 years, you could have a new mm-hmm. musical talent to be part of it. But anyway, it was a question, and I'd like to know what Steve thinks too.
Yeah, it would have been interesting if they had gone with that concept. I'm guessing the only reason they didn't do it was just, I guess, I mean, at the time when the first Fantasia came out, it was right around was when World War II started. So they obviously had to, you know, be mindful of their costs and everything. But it is interesting that they never, you know, they never came back to it until the late 90s and 2000. So, I guess maybe they're just so enveloped in their own and all the other projects that they just it was kind of like we'll just put it on the back burner and just use it when we, you know, when we need it, and it just. They never needed it until now. So, but I think it could still work today, especially like you said, with now with Disney Plus out, you know, that you can, you know, periodically release it, you know, every few couple of years. And I think it could do very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the return on investment would be worth it for them, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the ultimate bottom line. Yep. I think is the ultimate thing. So, So we do open up here with kind of a flashback of the first Fantasia and different bits and pieces, and we also get the original introduction of James Taylor as he kind of does his little introduction from the original Fantasia for this one. As we come upon our orchestra is the Chicago Symphony is doing the production here under the conduction of James Levine. And that brings us into our first segment here, which is based off of Ludwig van Beethoven's Symphony No. 5. We basically see a bunch of abstract patterns and shapes that eventually turn into various butterflies of different colors. And eventually it goes into kind of like a little battle between light and darkness, between the butterflies and bats. And eventually it comes down to it where light eventually conquers the darkness and the butterflies fly off into the distance as we come to the end of the piece. So, Miranda, what did you think of the kind of introduction, kind of tying in the original Fantasia to this one? And what did you think of this segment with the piece?
I actually love the idea of tying in the original, because why else call it Fantasia and then say 2000 if you're not going to somehow incorporate the original, otherwise give it a whole new name. I am kind of a fan of, I'm one of those music lovers that listens to a little bit of everything, and classical is something that I do listen to. I listen to it a lot when I'm studying or when I am reading. And this is one of the symphonies, that I enjoy. And I thought they did a really good, I love exploring like reassembling of the butterflies and the bats and that light and dark kind of being explored there. I thought it was done really well.
Mm-hmm. Andy?
Yeah, I love the acknowledgement of the past and the opening with the clips from the movie. Yeah, this is a very strong, powerful piece of music. I don't know if you guys remember this. You may be too young, but there was a classical music collection that came out on CD called Classical Thunder. Mm-hmm. We used to have commercials for it, and I have them, and I love those CDs because it's all that the Hall of the Mountain King, like all those kind of like all those powerful pieces of music, and this is on there also. It's such a great. You know, it's recognizable. You may not know the name of it, but you recognize Beethoven's Fifth when you hear it. Right. It goes back to, and I probably discussed this when we went over the original Fantasia. But you know, one of my things that I would love to do in life would be if I was ever going to get my master's of film or something, is to teach classes, film classes, and one would be about Disney movies. And one of the projects I would give the students would be. We would talk about Fantasia and Fantasia 2000 and tell them to find a piece of music and tell me how you would animate it to it. That's kind of what the spirit of Fantasia and this piece is. Like if you were given that task and you close your eyes and you hear Beethoven's Fifth, a lot of people would probably have similar to what we see on the screen here. Cause just the powerful, the explosions of color and everything like that to go along with it. And it's pretty amazing, and it's a great start. It's a short piece, and it really brings us in, because there are some long pieces on here, and the same thing with the first one. There were some longer pieces, but it's really good to keep the lengths varied on this, and this was off to a very, very strong start for this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And one thing that this film has that that its predecessor didn't is that we do have some pretty big name celebrities doing kind of the introductions for each piece, as we are officially welcomed into the film by Steve Martin. He brings up the fact that many of the orchestra, this is them playing together for the first time. And the thing I caught from that is his thanks to his what he calls his 2-week master musician home study course. So, but he actually mentions about how the initial plan was for Fantasia that was to be re-released periodically. So kind of bringing that piece up, and then we take it over to violinist Itzhak Perlman. And I will, by the way, apologize in advance if I inadvertently butcher any of these names. I don't mean to, Perlman brings up our next piece that we're going to talk about, which is The Pines of Rome by Ottorino Respighi. And he mentions about how when the animators first heard this piece, they had an interesting idea in mind, which brings us to our segment, which is we follow a family of humpback whales as they are swimming through the ocean. And eventually they take to the air as they have the ability to fly. We have a mother, a father, and a baby. The baby tries to do a little bit too much for his first time. He ends up getting separated from his parents in an iceberg. He kind of swims around trying to find his way out as he sees his parents in the silhouette. Eventually, he comes upon a beam of light that is able to lift him up out of the iceberg and reunite him with his parents, as they are then joined by a larger pod of humpbacks as they fly through the sky into the clouds, which then turns into water, and then they eventually end up in outer space, and we get one last big last shot of the parents and the baby flying in the air as we fade away as the song comes to an end. So, Andy, what did you think of this segment along with this piece? And humpback whales flying in the air, that's quite a mind trip that I think a lot of people would have. What did you think?
Yeah, I want to know what some of these artists were smoking when they thought of these concepts here. This is my favorite piece in the entire film. And and there are other ones that I'm going to gush on as well later on. But this one blew my mind, because the mix of CG and hand-drawn animation in this, and just put yourself in my... when I first saw this in IMAX, seeing this scene, this whole piece with the whales flying, I think it's supposed to be the Aurora Borealis going off in the background. Mm-hmm. But the whole thing with the baby getting trapped, you know, kind of getting trapped, is it kind of hits you like with your little emotion. So not only is it jaw dropping, but it hits you like in other places. And it's just amazing. The whole pod getting together and all flying in the sky. And the way it just goes with the music, it kind of has its ups and downs, and just take a moment to just look at the animation. Just look at the, I mean, it's not difficult to find, like, you know, okay, well, the whales are the CG and the water and everything like that is hand drawn, but the way it's mixed and really start to see, because we've talked about the CG is starting to creep in more, you know, Aladdin had it, Beauty and the Beast had it, you know, Lion King, they're all having it to some point. It's just not as, you know, prominent. And we're going to start seeing the shift where it's going to go in the other direction, because we're only, you know, how many years away from the final fully hand-drawn movie. We have literally almost 10 years and a bunch of films to discuss on this pod, but it just shows. And the mix in this movie is really good. It's mostly hand-drawn, actually, which is something I really appreciate and I wish they would bring back. But this is such a powerful piece in a different way than the first one. This is just – it's powerful just on the spectacle of it, I guess, is where the power lies. So I enjoy it. I love this piece so much, and I wish I had rewatched this sooner.
Yeah. Miranda?
I think it's very beautifully done. I, as an adult, yes. I'm like, wait, they're flying in the sky. How did I not comprehend that or remember that before. But I like the use of, you really think about it, this piece is done in like just variations of the same colors over and over again, kind of. And there's something that I find really soothing and inspiring about that. I don't know why, but I really enjoy like seeing what people can do. Because you're right, Andy, there's something about, and maybe it's because of our age of the three of us, but there's something about like drawn pieces versus like what we get now that there's just like nostalgia in that I find. So I think it makes it even more special.
See imperfections too. That's kind
of
what it is.
Yeah, that's, I think you're right.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, definitely. It's something that, that you don't get a lot with CGI. So
it's almost too perfect, even though I absolutely love it. I think you're both right. With CGI, you don't really get like those imperfections. It's almost like absolutely perfect.
Yeah, there's not much you can't do. So it kind of, it's one of those things you talk about like Jaws. Like, had the shark worked in Jaws, we would have gotten a different movie and it would not have been as good. It's like one of those things, like, you have to, I guess, creative, and it really makes you think and makes you figure things out. And sometimes what you get isn't a better result in the end. I'm not saying I dislike CGI. I love, there are so many CG movies that I just love, and I love seeing them in 3D in the theater because of the depth of field and all that stuff. But I don't know, maybe just because of how I feel about animation, how important it is to me in my personally, that I miss that part of the art form. And part of it, I think, is the imperfections, is the kind of the trying to figure out how you're going to do this or how you're going to accomplish this without the use of a computer that can figure out a lot of these, solve these problems for you, which I don't mind the problems sometimes, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. Definitely. Right, well, that takes us to our next, little kind of bumper here, as we're welcomed by producer Quincy Jones as he talks about some of his inspirations growing up. And that takes us to our next music piece, which is Rhapsody in Blue by George Gershwin. And our segment here, which is set in New York City in the 1930s, and the animation is inspired by the style of animator Al Hirschfeld. We, of course, are throughout the segment are introduced to four different characters. We have Duke, who is a construction worker, Joe, who is a down on his luck unemployed man, Rachel, a little girl, and John, a harried rich husband. All four of them have their own problems in life here. Duke would like to be, has dreams of becoming a jazz drummer. Joe basically wishes he just wants, just he could get a job. Rachel wants to spend a lot more time with her parents than be shuffled around to all her various activities by her governess. And John is in a very loveless marriage who longs for a more, a simpler, fun life. We kind of see them go about their daily routines. And then we see at one point, all four them kind of look down on a ice rink as they have envisions of their own personal desires. And then through a very, very set of very circumstantial and coincidental circumstances, all four of them get what they end up getting their desires. Joe ends up working in that same construction yard that Duke does. When he catches a jackhammer and gets a hard hat put on, and the boss just kind of is like, "Oh, you're here for the night shift, so you got the job." Duke ends up going to a jazz club and becomes the new drummer of that band. John is as Joe is working, a hook that's nearby him ends up pulling up John's snobby wife, which enables him to go to the jazz club and have some fun with some ladies. And Rachel, who had lost her her ball, ends up running into the middle of a street and is saved at the last minute by her parents, who end up as what she wanted, spends more time with them. So all four of them get what they want, as we get one last final shot of the city as they fade into the darkness for that. So Miranda, what did you think of this segment here and the music piece behind it? And I will say, it definitely reminded me a lot of it reminded me a lot of the segment All the Cats Join In from, I believe it was Make My Music, and a very, Kind of interesting how these, even though we have four complete strangers, they end up being kind of drawn together here by some very unique circumstances.
I thought it was really neat. I love the play and the use of color here. The music that went with it was fantastic. And I actually was reading that some of the characters are actually based off of like specific people or characters themselves. Like the little girl in the hotel is supposed to be based on the Eloise character by Kay Thompson. The red-haired man is John Culhane. He was actually the author of the making of books for both Fantasia and Fantasia 2000. And then, of course, you see Gershwin, the composer, at the piano briefly, too. So I thought that was really cool. Again, it's that drawn, like what I'm sure our kids would call, like, old school. But I quite enjoyed this. I thought it was really fantastic. My favorite thing of the whole is when the young lady, though, is going to all these, like, different classes and stuff, and every time it's the same teacher for, like, swim or dance or whatever, and every time she shows up, she's like, like, not her again.
Well, my favorite is, like, when they she's going to her swim lessons, and she's got, like, on, like, the... And she's like so protected.
Oh, she's
by
got everything. Yeah, she's got like
the floaties, the snorkel, the
every yes, yeah,
the little duck inner tube.
Yes.
Yeah. And one other thing I kind of caught on, which I thought was interesting, was John, the rich husband. His model reminded me a lot of Mr. Snoops from The Rescuers. I don't know
yes.
why.
Yeah.
When I saw him, I was like, he looks a lot familiar. Then I was like, wait, it's like he's Mr. Snoops. So I thought that was interesting. Andy, what did you think of this segment and music piece?
Oh, I really enjoyed this one. I love the hand-drawn animation here. Yeah, Miranda was spot on with the use of the colors. So many colors in this, and every it's like caricatures brought to life, basically. You know, little over exaggerations here and there. It's all about, you know, daydreaming and you know, when you're something in your life is lacking and you wish or you long for something else. Each one of these characters, like you mentioned in your description, Steve, it's they're all looking for something else in life. And it's you know, basic, like, I just want to work because I'm down on my luck, or I just want to spend time with my parents. But sometimes it's like, you know, you see all the times when the husband, I don't remember the character names, but when the husband is like, hey, you know, he takes a moment to play with the monkey, or he plays with the dog basically, or, you know, and the little girl. Yeah, that was hysterical. That kind of reminds me of
live his best life, basically.
Yeah, he just wants to, like, enjoy himself and not have this, like, snooty biatch as a wife. And and you got Rachel with her little orphan Andy type eyes here going, or whatever they are. And they just, it's also, you know, reminds me of, like, a city of dreams, city of hope. Like, you know, there are so many people in Manhattan that lives intersect all the time, and you just don't realize, you don't understand that. And it's a beautiful, like, kind of like coming together, I guess, of people. It tells a wonderful story of hope and wish and desire, and you can be happy, and there's luckily all of our characters get happy endings here, which is and it, like I said, it's whether it's doing something that you're really passionate for or just the ability to earn money. It's, you know, life, it's all, that's what life is about. Right. Doing, you know, what you want and being fulfilled and having, you know, your life, you know, it's, you only go around once. Right. So enjoy yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, that takes us to our next bumper here, as we are welcomed by Bette Midler, who shows off some sketches of some segments that were considered for both the original Fantasia and for this one that were eventually that didn't make the cut. And that eventually leads us to our next music piece, which is Piano Concerto No. 2, Allegro Opus 102 by Dmitri Shostakovich. And the segment we get here is an animated version of the classic of the fairy tale, The Steadfast Tin Soldier, by Hans Christian Andersen. We are welcomed in to a little toy store where the toys come to life at midnight, and we meet a ballerina and a very very evil Jack in the Box, who is smitten with the ballerina, She does not accept him, basically, is what I'm trying to say.
Advances.
Yes, we then are introduced to our tin soldier, who is unfortunately missing a leg. When he becomes immediately smitten with the ballerina when he sees her, and at one point he sees her standing on one leg and thinks she's just like him, only to find out that she does in fact have both her legs. So he's still is admired by her beauty. Of course, the Jack in the Box is jealous. That leads to a fight between the two, which sees the Jack in the Box throw a wooden ship at the soldier, who is knocked out the window, and in the rain he ends up going down into the sewer, where he somehow manages to escape without being devoured by a bunch of rats, and he ends up in the ocean, and is then eaten by a fish, which is then caught by a group of fishermen, and then that particular fish is brought to the house of that same of where he was, so he's able to go back into his box. And then the next night at midnight, the Jack in the Box again tries to kind of woo the ballerina, who refuses, and that leads to one final big battle between the soldier and the Jack in the Box, which ends with the Jack in the Box going flying into a furnace. And he is burned alive as the soldier and the ballerina do end up living happily ever after, as it were. And what's interesting about it is that if you know the original story of the Steadfast Tin Soldier, the ending is actually different, where instead of the Jack in the Box that ends up in the furnace, it's the soldier and the ballerina, and they end up getting getting burned up, and then when they're found the next day, the soldier is left with a little tin heart, and the ballerina, all that's left of her is her spangles. So clearly they did not want that ending, so they end up going with this new ending where the soldier stands tall at the end. So Andy, what did you think of this segment and this music piece?
That's a good change, I'm going to say. You know, it's kind of like if they had kept the original ending of Little Mermaid, where she turns into seafoam at the end. So good job, Disney. That was a good decision. Oh, I got thoughts on this one. I got thoughts on it. I like the piece. I do. Don't get me wrong. I think it could come across as a little scary. So
that Jack in the Box is freaky.
Yeah, I get a Judge Frollo vibe from him.
We all survived Return to Oz. I think we're fine.
Yeah, but did any of y'all get a Frollo vibe from this Jack in the Box too? Like, this love triangle is interesting. Those rats in the sewer, no joke. Kind of scary. This whole piece, I think, is a little scary. It's a very well done piece. The music is great. It's quite the journey that Soldier does go on, as Steve described on it, because it's kind of like one of those, like, this has to happen and that has to happen kind of things. And the ending is, you know, the fact that they go with the lighter, happier ending is still friggin' dark as all hell. You know?
True.
I mean, this Jack in a Box, like, you know, I know this is a Disney pod, but he's a dick, right? Come on, he's an asshole. He's using his, like, you know, a bully, even if you will, like, kind of it's kind of like, remember the end of Back to the Future? He's like Biff, and the Tin Soldier's like George McFly, right? He kind of like knocks out Biff at the end of the movie. Y'all got to be used to my weird analogies by now, right? Come on. So,
yes.
Miranda gets it worse than Steve does. But listen to the Muppet Pod. But this is a good piece. Watching it right now, I have it playing and thinking this is more up Miranda's alley than mine, I think. But because I want to hear her thoughts. But I do enjoy the piece. It's harrowing at times. I do say that, and they're about to get, they're in the sewer right now as I'm watching, and I get to see these rats who I'm like, but no, it's good, and it it's different. That's what I love about this Fantasia is that all these pieces are so very different from each other. There's no two are really that much alike, and it really just makes it just a more enjoyable anthology experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, Miranda, what are your thoughts on this piece?
It's my favorite.
That's what I said. That's what I mean.
It's got very strong, to me, Nutcracker-ish vibes. Both the music and the story. And the Nutcracker is one of my favorite things. Also, most of the time, if someone goes, ooh, that cartoon is dark, guess who's going to like it?
Miranda!
Sorry! But I do. You are right. I didn't think about how he reminds, like, what the Jack in the Box looks like, but I have it kind of, like, running through here, too. And you're correct. I agree with your assessment there. I also am glad. I'm glad you brought up that they changed the story, because that's something I was going to mention, them changing the original story. I think it works better, though. Sorry, I'm trying really hard not to, like, openly yawn while we're, like, because that makes it sound like I'm bored. I'm not bored. It's just time zones. No, this one is my favorite. And I think the piano concerto that is used here is actually kind of, like, fun. Like, it adds to the action scene, especially, like, when he's throwing the blocks and he's trying not to fall out the window and all of those things are taking place. It just kind of, like, adds to. Fantastic. And to me, there's something, I mean, I know we've done several pieces already and we've got a few more to go, but, like, I find something very intriguing about saying, hey, we have this fabulous concert classical piece. Let's create a story that would line up, especially when you're in those, like, you know, the high and lows and, like, the fighting scene just, like, aligns perfectly. I think there's something spectacular about the people that have to sit down and map out, like, what are we going to do for this song? What story are we going to choose? Like, are we going to create an original? Can we reuse something like they did here, being a Hans Christian Andersen story? This one's my favorite.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, that will take us to our next bit here, as the great James Earl Jones introduces our next piece here, which is, and I'm going to be testing my French here, the Carnival des Animaux, the Carnival of the Animals finale by Camille Saint-Saëns, and it's pretty basic segment, as we have a flock of flamingos that are going about their daily routine, only to be constantly interrupted by one of the flamingos who is having a little bit too much fun with a yo-yo. He is trying to kind of, you know, mix things up with the normal dull routine, while the other flamingos are getting very annoyed with him, and they at one point beat him down into the water, thinking that they've stopped him, only for the one flamingo to use the one yo-yo to wrap around all of them and tie them up, basically, while he then produces about six more yo-yos and has some more fun with them. So, again, pretty basic stuff. Miranda, what did you think of this piece and the music behind it? And kind of interesting note I noticed here was that the flamingo that had the yo-yo was of a different color than the other flamingos, which I thought was a nice little touch.
I also like that. It kind of gives you like a little bit of Ugly Duckling vibe, because he's different than the rest of them in a lot of ways, to be honest. I also like that the flamingos, I know it's a totally separate bird, but they remind me a lot of the dodos from Alice in Wonderland.
Yes, I was just thinking that.
And I'm obsessed with Alice in Wonderland. We all know that. So I kind of like that a lot of these pieces that they chose to make, they're somehow tying it back. Because even right now, as we're talking, what you or Andy will be like, oh, hey, did this remind you of this? And all of us are like, wait, yeah, it did. So I think it's really cool that they are intermingling other things. This piece is fantastic as well, and it fits wonderfully. I had actually, it's another classical piece that I had heard before. I love the use of flamingos, especially because, like, in Fantasia 1, we got, like, hippos and I don't know. We talked about it. We get like all kinds of things. So I absolutely adore these little flamingos. And by the way, having James Earl Jones right there, fantastic. Because to me, he's just one of the best voices. I mean, there's a couple other, but like he is one of the best voices, I guess I'd say, in showbiz in Hollywood. So perfect.
Only he can make the question of what would happen if you brought a yo-yo into a group of flamingos. Only he can make that legit.
Right.
A question that you would want, the question that you would actually want answered. Andy, what did you think of this segment?
Oh, I love this piece. It is so short. It is silly. Not short. It's not like what they, but it's a short, silly piece. And, you know, it's funny. Not that long ago, I was explaining, we were talking about animation. We have these thing at work, like we call it office hours, where people just come in, you chit chat and you're like, hey, everybody. And I was talking about this and trying to explain this to people. And they're like, what? They don't. And somebody like, weren't two people didn't believe that this actually existed. So I like called it up on my phone and I put it up to the camera on Teams, and they were like, yep, like what would happen if you gave a flamingo a yo-yo, basically. And I love that, you know, the one just wants to do his own thing. Yeah, he's different, he's an outcast. And a lot of these songs everybody's probably heard, you just don't know the name of it or mm-hmm. or the background to it. And yes, having James Earl Jones go, what is the age-old question? My James Earl Jones is great, but that somebody who is known for being like Mufasa and Darth Vader and having that that booming deep voice talking about this silliness that is going to ensue here. I also get, it's funny, I get whenever we have the little hosted segments in here, I get a very pre-show to an attraction vibe to it. Like, you know, you sit in the theater or whatever before you're going to go on, they give you the story of the ride before you're about to take the ride, and the animated piece is the ride. Like, I think, I know they do it with shorts in some of the Disney parks, but they should have a Fantasia theater in like a couple of the parks and just play this and the first one on a loop. So you just walk in, get a little air conditioning, you sit down, you don't know which one you could be watching at the time. I just think it's a great way to go. And yes, it is so, this is a fun piece, like, and you know, keeps, and we needed this after the darkness of the previous one. So I think, you know, the planning out of how this movie is going to, as a whole, is going to flow has been very good so far. The way the feeling, the emotion, the heaviness or lightness of the pieces are not, you know, they're alternating. So we're not like going down too far, up too high. You know what I mean? It's kind of keeping us, you know, even keel, like bringing us back down or lifting us up. So I think this was a great piece of a planning here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Well, that will bring us to our next bit here as magicians Penn and Teller talk about magic and how stage magic is pretty much just all a hoax. And well, Penn does all the talking while Teller's just doing, you know, his thing with all the tricks. And that leads us into our next segment, which is the only one that is featured in both the original Fantasia and this one. And that is, of course, The Sorcerer's Apprentice by Paul Dukas. Everyone obviously, you know, knows this segment. It's very well, you know, well regarded. Obviously, Andy, Miranda, you guys both talked about it when you discussed the first Fantasia back on the pod here. So I won't go too much into it, but I will say what's interesting is that one of my first memories of this segment the first time I saw it was not on either Fantasia, amazingly enough. It was actually on an old a videotape that I had. I don't know if either of you remember it. It was called Mickey's Magical World. It was released it was released in 1988 to coincide with his 60th anniversary. And it's basically just like a collection of some like classic Mickey Mouse shorts, mainly involving him with magic. And this segment was on it. So that was the first time I actually saw this segment before either Fantasia. So I always found that interesting. But Andy, you knew obviously they were going to have, like we talked about, a segment from the first Fantasia on this one. And I think we can both agree that, or all three of us can agree that this was the right one.
Yes, absolutely. This is the one that stands out the more than everybody, you know, because it's Mickey has a few iconic images of Mickey, right? You have Steamboat Willie, You have Sorcerer's Apprentice, Mickey. Christ, I'm a big nerd too, and I can't remember the other two because there's like four of them. And I'm trying to remember off the top of my head right now on this Sunday afternoon in July. But, you know, him obviously sitting there just in the, you know, with his red overalls, right? You know, there's a few different, this is the Mickey image that you see in your head, and Sorcerer's Apprentice Mickey, I mean, the effect that it's had on, you know, we had that hat that a lot of people didn't like at the studios for a number of years. You know, they had the perfect, I mean, all the hosts, I guess, on this movie are great, but there was no more perfect duo, I guess, to have than Penn and Teller. Magicians, probably the most famous ones at the time, I guess, you know, because you have like, you know, David Copperfield, David Blaine, whoever, but nobody with the personality or that probably out of all the magicians got influenced more by Sorcerer's Apprentice than Penn and Teller. I mean, Penn Jillette with that voice, he was the voice of Comedy Central for a long time. I don't know if that, and a lot of you guys knew that when all the promos and all the stuff, that was Penn Jillette. But, you know, you could put this in anything. Like, they could show this before like every movie coming out, and I would be happy with it because it's iconic. The images, you know, it's a little violent at times, and it does get a little scary for maybe the younger ones, but you know, this was, I was so happy that they included it because I got to see it on the big screen. And, you know, obviously I was not alive in 1940 for the first one. So great addition to this, and kept it, you know, again, with the whole connection to the original. So it's really was the best piece possible. And I don't think it has to be included if they ever were to get back and do more of these. I don't think it has to be included every time, but I think it's one that, like, should be in the rotation fairly heavily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Miranda, I would probably imagine you would agree with us that this, of all the pieces from the first Fantasia to be in this one, this was the right one.
Oh, absolutely. Because, again, just to reiterate a little bit of what Andy said, I think everyone can see Mickey in his robe and hat and know immediately what it's from, even if you weren't a huge fan of Fantasia or maybe you've not even seen it. I think everyone knows it and can recognize it. And I think, like, don't mess with a good thing. Like, it's perfect. Like, so it didn't need to be redone or just you kind of reiterating it is all you're doing it. You're just, like, reminding everyone how great it was. So I love that they also didn't touch it. They left it in its originality, which is fantastic because it is one of my favorite Mickey pieces ever. Also, when you reminded me of Mickey's Magical World, I like did a quick Google of it, and apparently there are some websites, one of them YouTube and one of them archive.org, which I've never used archive.org, so don't come at me if it's like gonna give you viruses, that's on you. But they're there in case anyone else is interested, or, you know, Steve, if you wanted to like have a bit of nostalgia, apparently you can watch that complete Mickey's Magical World thing that you remember on YouTube.
Right. Well, I did find it on YouTube and I've watched it.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Well, the version I saw was somebody like recording it off the TV. So it was
you know, like we talked about. I have a lot of those as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the iconic looks. I'm looking it up again. Yeah. Steamboat Willie, Sorcerer's Apprentice Mickey, Band Concert Mickey, and Brave Little Taylor Mickey. Those are the characters, I guess, of Mickey. And then you have Mickey kind of thing.
I can picture all of those in my head as you say them too. So that makes sense.
Oh boy.
And we actually also have a brief blast when we have, if you remember the original Fantasia, after the segment ended, we had the little shot of Mickey coming up to the conductor, Leopold Stokowski, and they kind of, you know, shake hands and everything. And they do that again here. But the only difference is that in the original, of course, that was Walt Disney voicing Mickey. Here it's Wayne Allwine, who kind of took over the voice of of Mickey Mouse. And then we transition into to the modern day, basically, where he meets up with James Levine, the conductor of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. And that leads us to Levine introducing our next segment, where he talks about the music piece and the story that's going to be it's going to be attached to. And while this is going on, we hear in the background Mickey looking for our good friend Donald Duck, who is going to be the star of the next piece. We see the silhouette of Mickey finding Donald in the bathtub, taking a shower. He's like, Donald, you're on in 30 seconds. And Donald's like, what? I'm not even ready. I thought that was a good little piece. And that brings us into our next segment, which is Pomp and Circumstance, Marches 1, 2, 3, and 4 by Edward Elgar. And if the name of that sounds familiar, it should, because the Vine had talked about, it was originally written for solemn pieces, but it would eventually become more well known for being the theme used during graduations, high school and college. Although us here at Place to Be really know what the Pomp and Circumstances will always be remembered for, and that's that's right, the entrance theme for the late great Macho Man Randy Savage. So. But we do have it here, and of course the story that is being told is of course the classic Bible story Noah's Ark from the Book of Genesis, and it actually stars our friend Donald Duck as well as Daisy. They of course are helping Noah bring in two of every animal onto the ark, and of course as we know Donald, he has many troubles along the way, and of course at one point when the flood starts and the ark is being lifted up on the water. At one point, Donald thinks Daisy didn't make it into the ark, though we find out she did, and she thinks he didn't make it in. So throughout the course of this segment, they each miss each other at the most inopportune times, as we see as the ark kind of float on the water, and then eventually the rain stops, and then the ark lands on the land, and all the animals are let off the ark, as Daisy eventually at one point leaves thinking that she has lost Donald. At one point she notices the gold harp pendant that she had throughout the segment is missing, and Donald happens to find it on the ship. And they, of course, that's when they finally realize that they both survived, and they reunite, much to Donald's delight, as they then walk off hand in hand off the ark and into what will be their new life. So, Miranda, what did you think of this segment of this piece? And I know you guys have both talked about kind of what your favorite segments have been. This was actually my favorite segment. I really enjoyed it. I liked this kind of retelling of Noah's Ark, and obviously having Donald and Daisy involved was a good little touch. So what were your kind of thoughts on this piece?
Well, I would like to include, like you talked about, the piece before, really, like the introductory piece. I love the whole, like, Mickey roaming around behind while the guy is just being, like, very calm talking about it. He's, like, not even fazed. And the best part is he's like, sorry, Daisy! Because you hear her like, ah! Like,
yeah, he walks in on her. And I love that you mentioned Wayne Allwine, who did Mickey for so many years. And fun fact, was married to Russie Taylor, who voiced Minnie Mouse. So yeah. Lots of fun.
She also voiced Daisy in this.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, there are so many people like that. Most people don't really know who they are, but. You know, like for those of us who are big Disney nerds, like Jim Cummings, he's been in like almost absolutely every movie for like a number of years. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm glad you gave a shout out and mentioned that Wayne Allwine did it. So I appreciate that, Steve. But back to you, Miranda.
Oh, no problem. But yeah, that was like probably my favorite. I actually really enjoyed Donald as a character, as like how he's written. Donald having his own piece was fantastic. I also get a sense when this scene opens up, it's very Lion King-ish.
Yes.
Like, mm-hmm. In the background and everything. And I'd like to point out the fact that Donald and Daisy are there to be the ducks on the boat, right? But he's actually, like, helping organize everything. Like, he's, mm-hmm. like, making it happen. And I love that the dragons and the unicorns are, like, fighting, and they're insinuating that's why they didn't make it.
Yes, that was a really nice little piece there that they added.
But it's very sweet. Like, Daisy is, like, saving a couple of the animals. They're making sure they all are part. I just thought it was very sweet, regardless of where you feel about religious stories or not. It's just really cute, especially when he's like check marking him off on the scroll and he realizes, oh crap, I don't have Daisy. So I adore this one. It wasn't my favorite, but it's pretty high up there. It's fantastic.
I also like how we started out with two rabbits on the ark, and then once they land and they start going out, we see they've had a family, and there's like 10 bunnies behind them. I thought that was a nice little touch there. Andy, what did you think of this segment and piece? And obviously you've said on many occasions that Donald is one of your favorite characters, so I'm sure you had to be happy to see him.
I was so happy that Donald got a little shine here. You know, I love Mickey. I do. But he can't have him with everything, right? You know, maybe if they do another one, Goofy gets his turn. And you know, the iconic, the Fab Five, we go through them. Or Pluto, maybe. Yeah, having Donald here, I gush about Donald all the time. Just my favorite character. One of my favorite characters of all time. And just because of his comedy. But he also has a heart. And his rivalry kind of with Mickey. And yes, I literally in my head was going, "No, Svenja, I'm gonna beat you," when that part was going. You know, I wrote down about the mythical creatures, you know, laughing and kind of like, you know, poo-pooing it. The whole, it's so funny is that it shows, you know, Donald has all of his Donald antics, you know, getting all pissed off and being a goofball and being that little thing, but it shows how much of a heart he has and love for Daisy, that how much they're he's missing her the entire time and how worried he is about her. And the same thing with Daisy. You know, we get a little funny nod that was actually mentioned on Friends. I don't know if you guys remember that one time when Chandler says something like, "Donald Duck, you know, wears no bottoms, but yet when he gets out of a shower, he puts a towel on." I don't understand that. And there's Donald like wearing nothing on a hammock, and then he gets kind of like embarrassed and like covers up before he puts his little, I guess, you know, whatever garb it's called on. But, you know, I do. It has such a happy ending to it. I love that. You know, it's the use of pomp and circumstance, you know, because like you mentioned, Steve, it's a graduation theme. It's also I saved you too, because I was, for a split second, I was going to do my response in Macho Man Randy Savage's voice. Donald Duck here. Yeah. Looking for Daisy. All right. Dig it. Anyway, sorry. I apologize if my Macho Man wasn't all that great right there, but no, it's a really great piece in it. And I'm really so happy that they picked Donald to do this, because I don't think it would have come off as well with any other character here.
Mm-hmm. I do have one question. How did we get pomp and I would like to know the history of how pomp and circumstance, dear Lord, ended up being the graduation song. Like, I mean, come on, especially when you realize there's marches 1, 2, 3, and 4, which is what composes this entire like piece. You're like, wait a second. How did we get from that to this?
That's why God invented Google, my friend.
I know. I'm just saying, like, when you watch.
He was more of
like
a rhetorical question, I know.
Yeah. I was more like, I know I could Google anything. What I. Yeah.
Oh, Miranda Googles. Miranda Googles.
Oh, I Google.
Yeah. And it's funny you mentioned about, like how worried Donald is about, you know, how Daisy is. Like, we think back to when we discussed the three Caballeros, and, you know, Donald was, you know, constantly thrust at some chasing all the women. You know, trying to get some love there. And now here, you know, well, whatever it is, 60 years later, and he's, you know, he's found the woman, you know, finally found the woman for his heart. So
out of all the characters, Donald's probably the biggest like flirt and love. He's kind of a Casanova of sorts, but down deep, he does love Daisy. I mean, I don't know. Have they ever really given a true relationship status of Donald and Daisy, like they're together, are they? Because I know there have been other female duck characters in some cartoons here and there. I mean, I know Mickey and Minnie are pretty much betrothed to each other, but I don't. It's kind of foggy on the Donald and Daisy relationship. I mean, because they each have Because Donald's got his three nephews, who are you doing, Louie? And then you have April, May, and June, Daisy's nieces, who kind of like hang out together. Like, what's the deal, Miranda?
So, according to CoalitionBrewing.com.
Okay.
Don't know why they get to. No, Donald and Daisy are not a couple. Donald and Daisy first appeared in 1940 Disney animated film The Thrill of All, and since have become iconic characters, although the two are shown together, like, their relationship has never been explicitly stated as romantic. But my argument to that would be they show us, because sometimes you'll hear people say something like, you don't necessarily need words. Like, you don't need a, like, they show you, though, a lot. Like,
we don't believe in labels. Roses, that's what you're saying.
There's hearty faces. There's kissy. She kisses him sometimes. Apparently, he has a girlfriend at some point named Gladstone Gander. Yeah.
Yes, that's what I remember. You know, look, I think they're in their romantic partners in some stories, and other stories, they're platonic, I guess.
Listen, if they were on Facebook, it would be, it's complicated.
I don't know. They were pretty happy to see that the other survives when they met each other at the end. I mean, when she gave him that kiss on the cheek, he got really excited.
He swooned. But I think this is its own story. You know what I mean? Like, they're playing, you know, a husband and wife in this story. So I think if it's just like a Mickey, you know, whatever Donald's short, where Donald and Deez, you're in it, I think it's kind of whatever the story serves. But in this, they actually are playing a married couple.
I think if you're asking me my personal opinion, yes, Donald and Daisy are a couple, because that's how I look at them.
You're like, Donald, you better put a ring on it, man.
Right.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, they should do Daisy doing, like, you know, the Beyonce song. That would be awesome. And why does Donald have such a and Daisy just talks normal? What's up?
Oh, that would be, that's epic. Disney, get on this. I need it with Donald in the background being like doing it, Andy. Yeah, I need him back there.
Yeah,
like,
I can do that. I can't talk like Donald, face, but like, I can do the.
I need him like getting bent out of shape in the background while Clara and Minnie are her backups dancers.
Oh my
and
she's god!
Singing it, and she's doing it, and I need Donald in it, like with Mickey trying to calm him down, and Donald's in it, and he's red faced because he's being called out because he hasn't put a ring on it. That's what I need, and I need Goofy walking in on it all going, oh, gosh.
Oh, short. It sounds like something you would see on, like, House of Mouse or something.
Yes, but I need it. I loved House of Mouse so much for that reason.
Oh, God.
Seems well, like hopefully, I can't deal with these two.
Well, so hopefully somebody does that eventually. Somebody's got to eventually.
Andy, get on that. That's what Miranda was about to say.
Well, that's fitting that we're here, but we do have one more piece to talk about as we get a introduction here from Angela Lansbury, the recently sadly departed Angela Lansbury, as she kind of talks about our final piece here, which is Firebird Suite 1919 version by Igor Stravinsky. In this piece, we see this like vast vast forest as we meet up with an elk who meets up with her his companion, a sprite who comes to life, and they go throughout the duration of the forest. Eventually, they come across what appears to be a dormant volcano. She goes inside to investigate, but she ends up inadvertently awakening the fiery spirit that's in the volcano, and leads to the forest in the nearby area getting destroyed by the volcano, and the sprite also seemingly gets destroyed. The elk then comes upon the destruction as he finds the sprite, who is deeply saddened by the destruction, and he... as he eventually kind of carries her away, we see that her tears that she cries ends up bringing bringing some of the land back to life, which brings her some hope. So she and the elk go across the entire forest and restore it back to its natural beauty. And she gets, she eventually kind of goes around the volcano and brings the greenery back. And we get this one great, like, last great shot of the sprite, kind of the sprite, breaking apart as that, as the forest is now a team again with green life as the elk watches on in approval. And that will bring an end to the segment. And then that brings us also to the end of the film as we get one last shot of the orchestra as they're kind of, as they're leaving their chairs. We get kind of some pictures of shots throughout the entire film, and then we go into the credits and we fade away to black. So Andy, what was your what did you think of this kind of final segment to close things out?
Oh, it was really nice. First of all, Disney legend Angela Lansbury hosting was great, and it was like the first time I think I had seen anything with her in it since she passed, and it kind of brought back like the memories, because you know, of Bedknobs and Broomsticks, and of course the voice of Mrs. Potts, and you know, she's just, she was a legend, and did so much, so many great things with the Disney company. I enjoyed it. I mean, I think I remember doing something on Stravinsky in college for a music class I took. I don't remember if this was the piece or not. I don't think so. But it, you know, basically shows the life, death, and excuse me, renewal of life in a forest. It's based on the Mount St. Helens eruption from 1980, and it's a good way to end, because, you know, it shows end, but there is going to be life after this movie, and Fantasia will live on.
Mm-hmm. Miranda?
I think it's fantastic, because if you really look at it as a whole, we get movies that haven't come yet, and like, at this point. And movies that have, because you get like a little bit of Bambi, you kind of get a Moana vibe with that sprite. I know they don't have sprites in Moana, but she really kind of reminds me of
Brave.
You also kind of get Brave as well. I think it's fantastically done. And again, everything is like drawn. I also get vibes of Andy. I cannot remember the piece from the first Fantasia. But it's like the very dark one with Chernabog?
Yeah. Oh, that is
Night on Bald Mountain.
Yeah, Night on Bald Mountain.
Yes, yep. Yes. And I even get really some, I know you both are going to do the ugh, but I even get some Black Cauldron vibes with this piece. Yeah. And I'm loving that it brings those up. It's very much the theme of life and death and rebirth. And what I love is it's done in a not so scary way. Like kind of doing a metaphor and teaching kids about life and rebirth and death, but like, you're not doing it in such a way that they're like, she's dying or it's dead or, you know, that we're used to, that Disney can like sometimes.
We get also a little of Miyazaki vibe here.
Yeah, yeah.
In the animation style, a little bit of the sprite. So I'm feeling that. Yeah, it's just a nice way to end the piece, the whole.
I would agree. And I love like the relationship that you see between the sprite and the elk as well. I think it's fantastic. And who better than to introduce us than, like you said, the Queen Angela Lansbury, because she's a queen. She's fantastic. She's just so put together. She's just so classy. So, I think it's a great way to round out with both an actor that you chose to introduce the piece and the piece itself. It just kind of rounds everything out, closes it off, and just gives new life into something that we're redoing, basically, because we did Fantasia and then 2000.
Yeah, and that will bring an end to Fantasia 2000. It did okay in the box office. It ended up grossing worldwide $90.8 million, with $60.7 million of that coming from the U.S. The budget for it was between $80 to $85 million, so it, you know, not too incredibly successful in terms of box receipts. It does have an approval rating via Rotten Tomatoes of 81%, so it's, you know, well reviewed. Most critics that have reviewed it said it does have its has its great moments, but it does do feel kind of as a little bit of a step down from Fantasia. And there was actually a plan to do a third film that began in 2002. It was called Fantasia 2006. But it ultimately be, but it was ultimately canceled in 2004 for reasons still unknown. There were a couple of short films that were released after this that were kind of initially discussed for Fantasia, for this film and the original Fantasia, and for a future Fantasia that eventually got released, like I said, short film form. You had Destino in 2003, Lorenzo in 2004, as well as One by One in 2004, and then The Little Match Girl in 2006, just to kind of name a few. And like you said, to this, even to this point here, 2023, there's still not been any word yet if they do plan to do a third film at some point. So we'll just have to kind of wait and see if they end up deciding to do that. So Miranda, your kind of final overall thoughts on Fantasia 2000?
I really enjoyed it. Again, I really wish I could remember what tie I had to it in the sense of, like, when I saw it originally. There are some really cool different, like, trivia facts if you guys ever want to look them up. I usually find those on the Disney fandom site. Like, if we don't bring them up, there are just some really cool things to, like, check out about this. Overall, I enjoyed it. I am really intrigued by what Andy brought up and we've all talked about here, which is, like, if we continue this, what and how and when. And I think it would be a fantastic thing for Disney to revisit.
Andy, your kind of final thoughts on Fantasia 2000?
Oh, no, it was great. Tremendous, great way to start the new century proper, you know, because to me it came out January 1st, because that's when I saw it. I saw it right after New Year's. I don't think I saw it on New Year's Day, but I do remember seeing it right around then. It's one of those, if they re-release it in theaters, I would highly recommend going to see it, because the small screen does not do some of these scenes justice. I mean, some of them obviously, like Rhapsody in Blue, you know, it's fine on the small screen, but the whales, seeing Sorcerer Mickey up there again, and Pomp and Circumstance, it's definitely a feast for the eyes and the ears with the new the new sound systems they have today and all that stuff. I think I would highly recommend it. And like I said, Disney, I don't know if you're listening right now, but please revisit continuing on with this. You know, it doesn't have to be every 10 years, we're good. You know, or if you want to do it in 2025, mark 25 years to make it a nice even number, I'm happy with that. Just give me some more Fantasia, y'all. Well,
I feel like it would have been a great year, because we didn't we just do, and they've done a couple of 100th anniversaries, because that was heavily discussed, but they just had a version of a 100th anniversary, and I feel like that would have been a perfect time to do it, but I guess they did not agree.
I mean, they're big into the anniversaries. There's an anniversary like every other year, whether it's a parks anniversary, like this year's the 100th anniversary of the Disney company. They celebrated, you know, back in, I think it was like 2000 and, oh God, whatever it was, I think it was 2001. I think it was, Walt's 100th birthday. It was like there's lots of anniversaries. They could do one in 2040 for the 100th anniversary of the first film. I mean, hope we don't have to wait another 17 years to get another one, but there's all kinds of anniversaries and kind of poor planning there on Disney's part, I would say.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you had a perfect opportunity and you missed it.
Mm-hmm. Well, can only look back and say what if. So, but with that, like I said, that will conclude this film. And of course, when we come back next time, we will continue our trek through the Disney animated films with the second of three films that actually came out in 2000. We of course had this one, and our next one, which as I mentioned was released between the IMAX release and the wide release of Fantasia 2000. And it's, as much as Andy, I'm sure, doesn't want to talk about it, we do have to talk about it, because it is a very interesting film, because visually it definitely looks amazing, but is kind of lacking in some other aspects, which we will go further into detail. And that is, of course, the 39th film in the Disney canon, and that is Dinosaur. Definitely an interesting film that we're going to talk about, and I am definitely looking forward to it. So with that said, let's go ahead and talk about where everyone can find us on social media and what other pods we got going on. Miranda?
Basically, I can be found always here on the Pop Feed. That's the home of all of my podcasts, both books, Lady in the Beard, and Most Sensational Inspirational. I'm going to screw this up, Tational.
You were almost there, Miranda.
I know. I was like, wait,
Celebrational.
Muppetational. No, I thought there was another word in between there, and I was like, I'm going to screw this up, Muppetational Podcast. That I do with Andy. Some days I feel like I don't have enough podcasts, and some days I'm like, why do I do this to myself?
You're not wrong there. You're not alone.
I'm not alone. But, I'm here on the Pop Feed. As far as social media, you can find me on, of course, the guys are going to talk about it, but I'll go ahead and mention the Place to Be group on Facebook. I am present on Instagram is where I allow people to, like, follow me publicly, as well as the TikTok at Mom the Nerd.
All right, Andy?
I don't have much of a presence outside of the Facebook in terms of the social media, so look me up there. Follow, you know, all the pages we have devoted, the PlayStation page proper, anything else we have. There have been some for some shows. I don't know how much they are, updated anymore, but just check it out. Yes, this is my primary home, and I'll get to that in a second, but I do one show on the wrestling feed at the moment. The PlayStation Wrestling Network proper is the name. With Logan Crosland, it's a monthly look at the NXT brand. We cover all the shows, and we took a little bit of an extended hiatus, but we will be back in a couple of weeks for our latest episode, so look for that. As well as, the shows here on this very Pop Feed, we have the Video Jukebox Song of the Day that, me, Steve, and Keith Langston are the primaries right now. We're always looking for more people to join the mix on that, so if you're interested in joining up, let us know. And we'll get some more voices out there. That's really what the concept is really founded and based on, is having lots of different voices, coming in and having a big mix, even though Steve and Keith are doing a tremendous job carrying the workload there for the most part, with me in there helping out. As well as some of my other shows, Traitors of the Lost Arks. I was not able to be on the last episode, but the next episode will be coming soon, hopefully. We're going to be looking at a Harley Quinn comics arc on there, which none of us have ever read before. So, and obviously for me, I've never read anything that we're doing on that show beforehand. Cartoons of Our Youth, I'm looking to do another episode soon. And a Blockbuster Rewatch, Laughing Theater, those will all be back soon. We do have some sad news, I would guess. Our friends at Stream Lounge I had to call it a day, and they actually shut down the site, the service, as of July 1st. Just the growth just wasn't there, and it just, they were great. So a shout out to Mark and Paul and Sean and Mason, everybody at Stream Lounge, for allowing us, inviting us to be part of it, to do the streams on there, to giving us the audio files to release them as podcasts on this very feed. And to everybody who joined, the streams, co-hosted streams with me and Miranda and Steve and everybody else, it was fun while it lasted. The tech was great, but the ability to watch movies and shows together in real time was a lot of fun. But unfortunately, it just didn't get to, where it needed to be by whatever. I don't know the particulars of exactly what the goals were of them. But it was fun while it lasted. But we are going to continue on. Miranda and I, when we do the Muppet Pod, we're going to continue to do the live watches of the movies when we finish the season. We're just going to do it the old school traditional way that we were doing before Stream Lounge came around. But so we wish them the best. And again, thank you to everybody who came over and visited on Stream Lounge to any of the live streams or the visited later on in the archives. So thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. It was a good time. And it's definitely sad to see them go. As for me, you can also usually find me here on this this feed, not just with this show, and as Annie mentioned, the Video Jukebox Song of the Day, but I also have Making Mount Rushmore with me and a group of guests come on and we discuss various topics. I do want to kind of pump our most recent episode where me and Keith Langston talked to musicians and bands that we thought were underrated and overrated. It was a lot of fun, a lot of great discussion. We even kind of did a little kind of analysis on our what we think this is the state of the music business at this moment. So a lot of fun, so be sure to check that out. I also have a pod over on the PTB Wrestling feed. Myself and James Grunberg have Extreme Resurrection, where we're going through the history of ECW, the WWE relaunch version from 06 to 2010. We are currently about to hit June of 2007, so some pretty interesting stuff coming on there, especially for those of you that know what happened in June 2007, and I will just leave it at that. I also have a couple of appearances over on the North-South Connection feed over there. Most recently, I was part of a group that discussed that kind of hyped up the men's Money in the Bank ladder match for Money in the Bank, which depending on when you're obviously when you're hearing this, will have already happened. So be sure to check that out. That's over on the YouTube channel of the South Connections. So if you're not yet, please be sure to subscribe to that. Those guys do a lot of great stuff over there with their with the pods that they do video versions of, as well as short videos over there. So be sure to get involved with, you know, get into that. And of course, these guys also mentioned the PTV Facebook page, Facebook group, which I'm a part of as well. And I will, of course, hype up our currently going on over there, our greatest song of the 2000s tournaments. We have a big grouping of songs involved in that. We're currently in the playing round when you're listening to this. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to seeing what the nation chooses as what they think is the greatest song. So just really quick, do you guys have any kind of thoughts about that tournament and any early kind of like what you think's predictions or who you think is like a heavy favorite?
Well, first of all, Kiss is not overrated, Steve. How dare you? Anyway, no, this is wide open. For me, the decade of 2000 to 2010 is a blur. So I am just going to go in and, oh, I know that one. Oh, I know, because that was when I, you know, became a parent. I had little kids. Mm-hmm. So
you're listening to the wheels on the bus go round and round.
Well, no, but there are like certain songs. Like there's already been like a Miley Cyrus and there's a Selena Gomez song that like I don't particularly love, but I remember having it playing in the car because of Jessica. So I will, you know, push my votes in those directions. But no, I personally know how much work these summer music tournaments are. So Steve, great job already on it, and mm-hmm. I wish you the best of luck, and thank you for you know keeping the tournaments going from me. And no, it's going to be a lot of fun. I have no clue what song's going to win or who's going to place. Like it's not like the 80s and 90s ones where I was like, yeah, I had more stronger opinions on this. This is kind of nice not really having the strongest opinion on some of this music and just going in and like kind of having fun with it and just, you know, seeing how the nation goes. And because this is more in the wheelhouse age wise for the Place to Be Nation, I guess, since I am one of the elder statesmen, I guess, age wise in PTBN. But Miranda, what do you think?
I don't know if I have any early predictions because I do feel like we're so early in it. Apparently, I got called out for who I said was overrated. I'm not even going to say it here. You guys both saw who I said was overrated. Don't come for me, apparently. I pissed a bunch of people off. That's okay. I don't know. It's really hard because also when you posted those the other day, Steve does a fantastic job. It's a lot of work to do a tournament. And, like, some when you were posting them, I genuinely, on a few of them, was having to, like, click on the link that you provide and be like, I don't remember this. So I think that's what's great about the tournament is it can either be, like, easily, like, oh, easy choice, boom, that's it. Or it can be like, wait a second, I've got to think for a moment. But it's fun because, in the end, it, like, what you pick doesn't matter. But I'm waiting for the discussions that came because, like, we had some great disagreements and discussions on breakfast foods. So, and I think people are very passionate about music.
So I'm excited to see what happens with the music. Because if you're that passionate about breakfast food, I think some people are bringing it when it comes to music.
I think too, because of, you know, really at the heart of Place to Be Nation, wrestling is the more common interest in the group.
I agree.
And,
yeah, yeah.
And any songs that have a link to wrestling, I think will
have
a bit of an advantage, like Bodies by Drowning Pool. I think that's gonna move forward. I mean, Headstrong by Trapped, that's a personal favorite of Place to Be Nation. So yeah, anything that may have been used as a Raw or SmackDown or pay-per-view theme could get a little bit of a bump up there. So definitely think that's where it could get interesting, is anything you may have heard in like that had anything to do with wrestling. I think that could be that could be fun. And we're going to see actually how boy bands fare. That's another thing I'm going to be on the lookout there. How boy bands are going to fare.
She's going to fight.
She's going to fight you.
We'll fight.
Everybody, Backstreet's back. All right, y'all.
Well, one thing I kind of noticed when I was culling the list together is that the early half of the decade, like 2000 to 2005, was really strong. And like a lot of songs I remembered, and like, because you know, that part of the decade, I was like in high school, so I was hearing a lot of that stuff on the radio. Then once I got to like 06 and 07, 08, like those years are like really weak in terms of like memorable stuff. Like they're top heavy with a lot of big songs, but then like once you get to like the lower end, it's like really when I was kind of pulling some, you know, just kind of pulling the list together, and I was kind of looking these up, I was raising my eyebrows a lot of these. I was like what the hell? But yeah, it is gonna be fun, and I'm looking forward to seeing how we do or how it does, you know, especially once we get out of the playing round and go into like the main brackets. So again, PTB Facebook group, if you're not a member, you know, let us know. We'll send you an invite so that you can get involved. So looking forward to seeing how that plays out. So with that said, we will go ahead and wrap it.
Sorry, I was going to say, maybe I'll be really nice to everybody and take all these and make a public playlist on the Spotify.
Oh, Spotify.
That's going to be a big playlist.
Well, I'll do it as they win. I'll do it as they win. Like, you got to go to the next round.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good idea. I like that. But with that, we will go ahead and wrap it up here. Thank you all for joining us. It was good talking Fantasia 2000. We look forward, again, like we said, when we come back and we do Dinosaur. We're going to get into that. So for Miranda Berthold and Andy Atherton, I am Steve Riddle. This is Pop Goes the Classics here on the Pop Experience, and we will see you next time.